Go. It is time for Kaleidoscope on KDOM. Today we get to talk with Liz Stahl with the University of Minnesota Extension Office. Liz, we appreciate you taking time out. Sounds like you're running around all over the place.
Well, that's right. It's that time of year. We're doing private pesticide applicator recertification workshops, and I'm in Albert Lea today. We've got a number of programs coming up. We'll be in Fairmont Monday, February 9th at the Knights of Columbus from 12:30 to 4:00. We'll be in Jackson a week after that. That's on Tuesday, February 17th from 12:30 to 4:00 at the American Legion. And then we've got Worthington. That'll be Monday, February 23rd at the Event Center. That's 9 to 12:30. So that's our one morning session. But anyway, again, just to remind people, these are for recertification. So if your certification is up this year, you can attend one of our workshops. Of course, you know, again, we love having people come to our workshops. We go over different research and information, go over safety stuff and all that, too. But we do know that there's people, too, that are new to the system or their certification expired. So then you do need to take the test to get back into the system. So then you can come to one of these workshops in 3 years to get recertified, too. And that's one thing, you know, there has been a lot of changes, too, that anybody who's mixing, loading, or handling a restricted-use product, so not just applying, now they also need to be certified, too. And a person needs to be at least 18 years old for that, too. And just a reminder, what are restricted-use products? So that would be anything with atrazine, acetochlor products. There's a number of insecticides, like for soybean aphids, counters, for example, some planter box treatments. So those are just some of the examples out there. Paraquat, of course, that's a restricted-use product, too, just if people are curious. But again, working in the midst of the recertification workshops, and we've got more across the state, too, as well, if you just check our website about that.
It sounds like it probably would be a good idea for everybody on the farm to get certified.
Well, you know, we get questions about that. You know, if they're not applying restricted-use pesticide, do they really need it? Well, technically, you don't if you're not applying a restricted-use pesticide, but, you know, again, some products sometimes are added to the mix, or maybe you change plans and you use, like, a planter box insecticide. You know, so those are some things that can pop up where you'd be glad you've got it, then see that option. Plus, it also, you know, we just go through different safety topics and just updating an integrated pest management, talk about handling, you know, the right PPE or personal protective equipment to wear. So, yeah, all those things are just really good to review for any type of pesticide application.
And as far as recertification, the event is really only a few hours long, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, we block off 3.5 hours for the recertification workshop, and then, hey, you're good to go for another 3 years.
It's that easy.
That's right.
Very good. All right, Liz, what else are we talking about today?
Well, I just thought I'd highlight, you know, one of the things that has come up, too. We do surveys during the workshops, too. That's just getting feedback from people, and that really helps us figure out, you know, what issues people are seeing out in the field. Our researchers value that information. We value that as an educational standpoint, too. Because, again, it helps figure out, okay, where do we need to kind of focus our efforts? And one of the things that we were asked at these workshops, too, is like, okay, you know, what diseases and insect pests did you have issues with last year? And it's just interesting, workshops so far, yeah, both tar spot and southern rust and corn, you know, those were a lot of people had seen that in their fields this past year. And you know, both of those diseases are caused by a fungus. So, again, we haven't had southern rust that much in the past, really. We didn't even have that on our questions in the past because it just was so unusual, but it's been a big, big one to see this past year. Southern rust, now that does not overwinter in Minnesota, so who knows if it's going to be an issue next year. We're not really sure, but tar spot, that one does overwinter, so we are looking like, yeah, okay, that's something we're going to be needing to be out there scouting for and keeping an eye on. Hopefully, you know, when you're looking at hybrids for next year, you are looking at those ratings to see how that hybrid would perform, you know, if tar spot was an issue or southern rust. You know, a lot of our hybrids, we hadn't been rated for southern rust in the past because, again, it wasn't an issue, but certainly came to the forefront last year. So that's something to look at. We don't have economic thresholds right now for treatment for southern rust just because it is so new. But using hybrids that are resistant, that is, again, a great tool. Plus, if it is, you know, the disease conditions or the weather conditions, I should say, look conducive for that disease. We've got our IPM Pipe website, too, that shows how it's progressing throughout the U.S. You know, a timely fungicide application. And this is both tar spot and southern rust, anywhere from, like, tasseling up to that R3 stage, that's the milk stage. That's really that prime window to make a fungicide application if it looks like we're going to need to do that in, you know, this next year or upcoming years.
Now, can you be preemptive? I mean, can you apply that sooner?
Well, you know, that's what a lot of people did this year. Our number of people did. And, you know, you can apply too early. And that's one thing we've done surveys with, too, at these workshops. And, you know, if you're applying a fungicide before tasseling, you very well could have that product could run out of steam by the time these diseases really start to take hold out in the field. Plus, you know, is it going to be an issue or not? So, you know, most of these fungicides, they're active for about 2 to 3 weeks, maybe up to 4, depending on the product. So, again, if you're applying really early in the season, yeah, just unlikely that there's going to be enough concentration of that product around. People are just applying too early, you know, and we also don't want people just to go out and apply a fungicide just in case, too, because, hey, you know, number one, that's an added expense. Do you really need it? You want to see what are the environmental conditions like? You know, do we have the disease present or not? Those are all things to look at. Because, yeah, if we do have the disease and got the right conditions, then you got a likelihood of getting a payoff. But just making an application just in case, you know, you're also selecting for resistance to that. And with the fungicides, you know, there's 3 different families right now that are active on, say, like southern rust, for example. If we get resistance in one of those families, you know, none of the products in that family are going to work. So we really want to do everything we can to prevent resistance from developing. And one of those things we can do is just only use those products when we need them. Just like antibiotic resistant in humans, you know, we got to watch with these, you know, pesticides that we're using too.
And like you said, especially with the southern rust, there really is not any way to know if it's even going to make an appearance this year.
Well, that's right. You know, just everything, the stars just aligned, and it was a big year for southern rust this past year. Is it going to happen again? I don't know. You know, we'll have to see, but that's the thing. You're just scouting, keeping an eye on things. And if it does look like a risk, yeah, then a timely application can help. But, you know, otherwise we just don't want people to be jumping the gun. And again, you know, when economics are tight, that's just, you don't need that added expense. It's very unlikely just an application is going to pay off if you don't really have any disease present out there.
Right. And then if you do it too early, even if it does show up, you may have lost the effectiveness.
Well, that's right. And then you're looking at, you know, well, you probably should apply another one. And some people, you know, this past year, they're like, well, I already applied one. It's like, yeah, well, you know, it was too early.
Yeah.
So, scouting is really important in all this.
All right. Well, Liz, let's talk a little bit about strategic farming.
Yeah, this past week we had a really great program. We highlighted pollinators. It's kind of a different topic to have on the program, but it, again, you know, pollinators are so key, you know, critical to many of our crops, and even soybeans, they can benefit from having, you know, pollinators helping out. I know soybeans are self-pollinated, but again, our pollinators do help with that crop too. And so again, that was a topic. We had one of our researchers from the University of Minnesota at the bee lab was on, and he really focused on like our native bees, so not honeybees necessarily, but our native bees, talking about how they nest in cavities and in the ground, and there's so many species out there. But questions were like, well, okay, how do we know when bees will be around? And they said basically like whenever there's flowers, bees should be around there. And, you know, people had questions about, well, what size of habitat, if I want to encourage bee populations, do I need? And really just any kind of habitat really helps them out. You don't have to have a huge area. Just getting flowers out there and for as long as you can in the season is going to help. And people too might look at having kind of a more expensive mix, or you got a lot of different species in there, but that's not really necessary either. He showed research that they've done, and as long, again, as you have flowers out there, they use some more inexpensive mixes. If those were flowering, they perform just as well as some of these really, you know, more expensive, very diverse mixes. So very interesting. If you want more details, we'll have that recording posted online on our website. Should have it by early next week. So again, do encourage people to check that out.
Definitely. All right. So what about upcoming programs, upcoming events? We got this kind of a busy time for you.
It is a busy time. Next week we'll have strategic farming on Wednesday. That'll be February 11th. The topic will be on forecasting tools for crop and pest management. Then we'll have on the 18th cover crops. That will be the topic. And then on the 19th, we have our corn and our winter crops day and small grains program at Slayton. So that's a great program, too. We'll cover kind of the corn and soybean topics in the morning and then the small grains topics in the afternoon. There's been a lot of interest in oats now, too, with the facility coming up in, is it Austin or Albert Lea? But anyway, yeah, so that's another nice opportunity as well, too. So encourage people to check that out. If you want to get more details on any of those, just go on our Extension Crops website, look on our upcoming events. Those are all listed on there. You should be able to click on that and find out how to register for any of these and you know, if there's any costs involved.
Very good. All right, Liz, anything else we need to mention today?
Well, I suppose I better mention that website, too. So,
definitely.
Yeah, so it's just z.umn.edu/crops. Again, that's where you can find, again, our upcoming events. And strategic farming, that's just z.umn.edu/strategic farming. If you're not registered for that yet, I do encourage you to check that out, too. Again, it's really nice joining live. We have a lot of great questions coming from the audience. You have the opportunity to do that if you do join live. But if you can't, you know, you can always listen to the recordings after.
Very good. All right, Liz Stahl, thank you for talking with us today.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. And that will do it for Kaleidoscope this morning on KDOM.